Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Meet the next generation of podcast stars with SiriusXM's Listen Next program, presented by State Farm. As part of their mission to help voices be heard, State Farm teamed up with SiriusXM to uplift diverse and emerging creators. Tune in to Stars and Stars with Issa as host Issa Nakazawa dives into birth charts of her celeb guests. This is just the start of a new wave of podcasting. Visit statefarm.com to find out how we can help prepare for your future. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to another edition of Nightmare Fuel Creeps and Peepers. I'm Dan Cummins, and I'll be sharing another original short story of the fictional horror variety. Noise cancellation headphones are highly recommended for the most immersive experience. Hope you enjoy this new nightmare. Time now for the tale of Vacancy. Chris and Alana got to Savannah 3 hours later than they'd originally planned. It was the third weekend in April, just a few days past the tax deadline. Alana felt terrible, but not because Chris had guilt-tripped her over her being the reason they left late. He hadn't. In fact, he kept reminding her that it was a good thing that she took her still pretty new job at Acuity so seriously, that she wasn't willing to bounce out early on a Friday, like many of her coworkers did, even if she had gotten the time off approved in advance. If they really needed her, it was good to show up and put in the work. She'd be rewarded. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but someday. Chris respected the grind, and he loved that Alana was willing to put in the work to get to where she wanted to be, where they both wanted to be. She had a great job, and she didn't take that for granted. She was one of Acuity's youngest accountants, and they were one of the biggest, if not the biggest, accounting firm in all of Atlanta. They paid well, and they had fantastic benefits. They'd given her a job as a bookkeeper right after graduation, and 4 years later, after she studied for and then earned her master's while taking classes at night, she'd gotten a promotion to be a proper accountant, and she had just survived her first tax season in that position. No, not survived. She kicked tax season's ass. She was a rock star. Chris was good for Alana. His relentless positivity counterbalanced her sometimes too aggressive self-criticism. Chris kept telling her that, of course, they'd gotten in late. It was unrealistic, looking back, to ever think they could possibly be on the road before 4 p.m. on a Friday, and he should have never even pushed for it. Chris was just happy to finally get a weekend out of town with his girl. They'd both been putting in a lot of hours at work, all year. Longer than all year, actually. He was in a new position at work as well, and was grinding his butt off too, even if it didn't look like it, because he didn't carry the same kind of stress. He bought a small training studio 2 years earlier. Not least, bought. Was it scary as hell to sign that loan paperwork? To know it was his ass if he couldn't run a profitable business? Yeah, a bit. But he would have never signed that paperwork if he hadn't felt confident, real confident, in fact, that it was all going to work out. It was a very calculated risk, the only kind Chris took. Chris had been training at a very similar place, the place he modeled his own business after, for over 7 years before he made the jump to owner. And now, if he needed to bounce out for a couple days and recharge, he had Jamal. He considered Jamal, next to himself, to be his best trainer, and just a solid dude. They'd been friends since college, and had worked together ever since college, and now Jamal knew how to run his studio about as well as he did. If Chris needed to get away for a weekend and leave early on a Friday, all he had to do was just not book any clients past 3 p.m., have a quick meeting with Jamal to make sure everything was tight with the rest of the staff, and then he could bounce. Easy. Life in general felt pretty easy for Chris most days, despite the long hours. He loved his job, loved his girl, had a great relationship with his family, was in killer shape, and his naturally laid-back and confident temperament allowed him to truly live by that mantra of, don't sweat the small stuff. He and Alana might disagree on what stuff was small, but she admired how he didn't seem to get stressed out by almost anything. As long as they were in a good spot in their relationship, as long as they were both healthy, and their siblings and parents were healthy, and the bills were paid, he always seemed good to go. She was the worrier, the planner. And now she felt like she was ruining their first weekend away in over 6 months, the one she had planned. Even though Chris didn't make so much as a disappointed or frustrated face about not leaving until almost 7, Alana still felt bad. Even when Chris told her he wasn't speeding because he was trying to make up for lost time, that he was speeding because he rarely got the chance to take his new, well, new to him at least, Escalade V-Series out of town, and it was fun as hell to let some of those horses really ride. What was the point of having a V8 if you drove it like an Elantra? And then Alana felt even worse when she messed up their hotel reservation somehow. She thought she had for sure reserved them a deluxe room with a king bed at the East Bay Inn. But when they got there, her reservation wasn't in the computer. She also couldn't find an email with the confirmation number or even a credit card charge holding the room. And now the hotel was fully booked. And not just for the night, but for the whole weekend. Ugh. The next three hotels in the historic district downtown by the river that they called were also fully booked. And downtown was the only area where they wanted to stay. It was where all the best bars and restaurants were, and where a bunch of historic homes and everything else that made Savannah, Savannah, was. They didn't drive all the way down to the coast for a vacation weekend to stay at some shitty red roof inn just off the freeway on the edge of town next to a Waffle House. It would have been better just to have stayed home and saved the money and all the aggravation. But still, Chris remained calm. He wasn't upset with Alana. Instead, he felt bad for her. He wished he had been the one to mess up the reservation so that Alana would stop beating herself up. She was so hard on herself whenever she made a mistake, which was pretty damn rare. Luckily, just when it looked like all hope was lost, when they started walking around to see what else was nearby that maybe didn't show up on their iPhone maps, there it was, just a block from the East Bay Inn, the 1780. It was just past 11 p.m. when they saw it. They couldn't believe they hadn't noticed it before. They actually walked right past it, and then spotted it when they turned back around. It was a small boutique hotel that overlooked the river, with a restaurant and bar in the basement. They tried not to get their hopes up when they started walking towards it. They assumed the lobby was probably already locked up for the night, that you'd need a key to get in, or that if you did get in, you'd find out that it was fully booked just like the other hotels. But the door to the lobby was open. And incredibly, they still had rooms, good rooms, for a lot less than the East Bay Inn would have cost them. $115 a night, and that was for one of the nicest rooms. Chris and Alana both shot the front desk girl a, "Did you just say what I thought you said?" look when she told them how much it cost. They booked room 407 on the fourth and top floor for both Friday and Saturday night and arranged for a late 4 p.m. checkout on Sunday. And as Sherry, the front desk clerk, a young woman who appeared like she could still be in college, rattled off a list of amenities, the first couple of clues that their stay might be unusual were revealed to them. The first clue was Sherry not mentioning anything about complimentary Wi-Fi, or any kind of Wi-Fi. Then when Chris asked her for the Wi-Fi password, Sherry looked at him like he had just asked her what the launch code for the space shuttle was. Alana then asked Sherry if the hotel even had Wi-Fi. She'd never stayed at a hotel, at least not as an adult that didn't have it, and Sherry continued to just silently stare at them with the same puzzled expression on her face. Finally, when Chris said the word internet, Sherry lit up and exclaimed, "Oh, yes, of course, the internet. I'm sorry, but we don't offer any internet service here." After Chris and Alana both shot her a, "You've got to be kidding me," look, she explained, "The hotel insists that our guests, while they're with us, to really be here, to experience all the amenities we have to offer and receive the full 1780 experience." Chris and Alana both tried to act like all of that was a totally reasonable thing to say, but also shot each other a quick glance of, "Oh yeah, we're going to be talking about this in a minute." Who was Sherry kidding about no Wi-Fi, meaning you couldn't use the internet? It wasn't like they couldn't just tether their laptops to their cell phones. Oh well, it also wouldn't hurt to just leave their laptops shut, stay off those screens for the weekend. The second clue that the 1780 really did things their own way was when Sherry took their payment. The hotel didn't have a normal credit card reader. Sherry took an actual physical imprint of Alana's card on some kind of carbon copy sales slip. Alana had never seen one of those things before. Chris hadn't seen one since he was a kid. The final clue was when they got an actual key to the room, like a metal key, not a magnetic key card. Neither could remember ever getting one of those before at a hotel. After getting their key, Sherry pointed out that the bar and restaurant in the basement would be closing soon and that they'd need to hurry if they wanted to grab a late dinner. Chris and Alana couldn't believe it was still open. They immediately stopped thinking about the lack of Wi-Fi and the credit card machine that looked like it should be in a museum and the metal key and started thinking about food. They were both starving and so grateful that not only had they still been able to get a room downtown by the river, but they also got a room in a hotel where the kitchen was still open. While Alana stood in the lobby with their luggage, Chris bounced down the stairs and checked with the restaurant to make sure the kitchen would remain open long enough for them to grab some food. And then he bounded back up the stairs to the lobby with good news, and they both took the single tiny elevator to the top floor, laughing about how weird Sherry was along the way. How did anyone in 2024 not know what Wi-Fi was? They quickly dropped off their luggage in their room, looking around just long enough to think it was cute but dated, and that it had a great view of the river, and then they hurried back downstairs since Chris had promised that they'd put their orders in by 11:45. Once they sat down, they finally started to truly relax. Chris ordered the braised short ribs, Alana got the shrimp scampi, and they both ordered some drinks. It had all worked out. Crisis averted. When their meals came out, they were better than they could have ever hoped for. Delicious. They ended up eating off each other's plates since it was all so perfectly prepared. And then they split a slice of house-made key lime pie. Maybe the best they'd ever had. Alana knocked back a couple of basil gimlets and Chris had a couple glasses of the house red wine. By the time they had finished their first round of drinks, they didn't care at all about getting in late or missing out on their original hotel. Even with Wi-Fi, it couldn't possibly be better than this place. They were now more excited than ever to be on vacation, after feeling for about an hour like their first weekend in far too long was going to be a complete disaster. While they drank and ate, they also noticed a few more things that were a bit strange. Strange, but not alarming. The first was, there were only three other guests, all sitting at the bar. No one else came in while they were there, and Chris and Alana were the only ones eating. Sure, it was late, but it was also a Friday night, downtown. The food was excellent, the drinks were top-notch, the staff was super on it and accommodating, so why was the place so dead? The next weird thing was the way everyone dressed. Straight out of the 90s. And yes, 90s fashion has been back for a minute, but when you're out and about, not everyone has hairstyles and dresses like they are still in the 90s. But at this bar and restaurant, everyone did. Actually, flashing on Sherry's hair that looked like she copied the style from Jennifer Aniston in Friends and the choker necklace she wore, everyone in the hotel looked like they were straight out of the 90s. And then there was more weirdness about technology. Right after they ordered, Alana took out her phone. No service. She asked Chris, and when he checked, it was the same for him. No service. No service and no Wi-Fi? Neither one of them could recall the last time they experienced that when they were in a city. At first, they assumed it was just because they were down in the basement. Old building, thick brick and concrete walls. Not that unusual in a place like that to have poor or no service. But then when they asked their waitress, Natalie, who was walking by while they were checking their phones, if there was service for anyone anywhere in the basement, thinking maybe it was just their provider, the way she looked at them, the way she looked at their phones before saying no, it was like she had literally never seen an iPhone before in her life or had ever heard of cell service. Alana and Chris laughed hard about that when they finally took the elevator back up to their hotel room. Who was running this hotel? The Amish? One weird family where all the kids are homeschooled and no one ever gets to leave? They didn't joke very long, though. By the time they made it back up to their room after dinner and drinks, it was almost 1 a.m., and they were real ready for sleep. They were both exhausted, had full bellies, and had drank just enough to be able to quickly and pleasantly drift off into dreamland. They didn't even bother to turn on their TV, didn't try and sneak in any vacation hotel room sex either. They did notice that their phones still had no service, though, and were for sure annoyed that they were in a hotel that had no internet and was inside a dead zone. What were the odds of that? But it wasn't like they needed to call anyone at that moment, or like they had to check TikTok or Instagram or their emails. So they just got undressed, brushed their teeth, washed their faces, and hit the bed. And within 15 minutes, they were both fast asleep. And then they were both awake. At precisely 3 a.m., an alarm was going off. The noise was coming from an alarm clock that sat on the nightstand on Chris's side of the bed. It was an old one, and he couldn't figure out how to turn the damn thing off. Alana finally told him to just unplug it. It's not like either one of them had to be up at any certain time. They had literally nothing planned for the next day. They were both of the mindset that the best vacation day is waking up whenever your body just happens to be ready to wake up, grabbing a big breakfast and a strong cup of coffee, and then figuring out what you're going to do for the day. After pulling the plug, they were back asleep within minutes. And then they were both woken up again when the alarm began to blare once more. The alarm coming from the alarm clock that Chris had definitely unplugged. An alarm clock that still displayed the time as being precisely 3 a.m. An alarm clock that was also now plugged back into the wall. That definitely freaked him out a little bit. After unplugging the alarm for the second time, Chris grabbed for his phone.
Baby, my phone is saying 3 a.m. too. What about yours?
What? How is that even possible? It said 3 a.m. last time, right? That's what you said.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what it said.
Weird. My phone's saying 3 a.m. too.
Crazy.
And then a new thought hit Chris, and he asked, hey, with no internet and no cell service, should our phones even know what time it is?
I think they run off GPS, maybe?
Alana groggily responded. I'm so tired, I honestly don't even care. You sure the alarm clock is unplugged this time?
100%, Chris replied.
And then he double-checked by pulling the cord around to the front of his nightstand and feeling the three-prong plug with his fingers. Following that, they both managed to fall back asleep. It still didn't take too long. And this time, they slept for what felt like hours. And maybe they did sleep for hours. Time was no longer, as they were about to discover, working like it should. After sleeping however long they slept, 1 hour, four, six, they both awoke, again, to the same alarm beeping. The same alarm that was still showing the exact same time. Precisely 3 a.m. Chris yelled as he popped out of bed. Okay, what the fuck is going on? Mr. Cool, calm and collected, was no longer feeling his typical steadiness. He stood up, walked over to the wall right next to the front door, and turned on the overhead lights.
Chris, what are you doing?
The alarm clock is saying 3 a.m. again, baby. That's impossible. And it's plugged back in. And I know I unplugged it. I know I unplugged it twice. Alana sat up looking even more concerned than Chris now. She grabbed her phone.
This is crazy, she muttered.
She held her phone up and turned it around so the screen faced towards Chris.
It's still 3 a.m. on my phone. How is it still 3 a.m.?
Chris, panic rising inside of him, grabbed his own phone that also said it was still 3 a.m. Someone has to be fucking with us, he asserted.
How could they change the time on our own?
Wait, are you sure you locked the door? Alana asked, alarm now rising in her voice. Chris examined the lock.
Yeah, even the chain is on. There's no way someone could have snuck in.
Unless they came in through the window, Alana suggested. Chris proceeded to immediately check all the windows. One of them was unlocked, but it didn't open silently. You could hear the wooden window frame squeaking a bit against the groove it slid up and down in. And judging by the lack of balconies and ladders on their side of the building, about the only person who could climb that wall to get to their window was Spider-Man.
I don't know, baby. I mean, yeah, this window is unlocked, but it's not the easiest to open. And it's not quiet.
We would have heard it. And no one could climb up this high. None of this was helpful. Alana needed some answers. Her analytical accountant's mind was not dealing with the disturbing confusion of their situation well at all.
I'm calling the front desk, she declared.
Sherry picked up after the first ring.
Hello, Miss Jackson. Sherry at the front desk speaking. What can I help you with?
Hi, Sherry. We're having some problems with the alarm clock going off. And also, can you tell me what time it is?
Certainly, ma'am. It's 3 a.m., of course.
Alana felt the hair stand up on the back of her neck.
What was happening? Why would she say, of course, it was 3 a.m.?
Okay. Thank you, Sherry. One more thing. Is the hotel in some kind of dead zone? We're not getting any cell service.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Miss Jackson.
Yes, the hotel most certainly is in a, what did you call it? A dead zone. One could say that the hotel is itself a dead zone. Is there anything else I can help you with?
No. No, thank you.
Alana set down the phone. She was not doing well at all now. Baby, what is it? You okay? What'd she say?
No, I'm not okay. She said it was 3 a.m., but then when I asked her if we were in a dead zone, she said that the hotel was a dead zone.
The fuck?
Well, I mean, we both already thought she was weird.
But what is even that supposed to mean?
Chris, I want to leave.
Now, Alana? It's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Is it? Alana shot back.
How is it still? Wait, actually, why is the clock still saying 3 a.m.? It can't have been less than a minute since you woke up.
Both Chris and Alana looked at their phones. Both also still said 3 a.m.
What? This can't be.
Alana suddenly had an idea and she blurted out, count to 60 with me.
What? 60 seconds. Let's count to 60. See if the time changes. 1,000. 2,000. 3,000.
Both Chris and Alana took their time, counting all the way to 60. And the clock, and their phones, just like they both feared and expected at this point, they all remained stuck on 3 a.m.
What the fuck? Yelled Chris. What is this? Some kind of cyber attack or something? I'm calling the front desk again.
Chris grabbed the phone and dialed 0. Again, Sherry picked up after the first ring.
Hello, Mr. Owens. Sherry at the front desk speaking. What can I help you with?
Chris paused. How did she know his last name?
The room was booked under Alana's name. Alana had used her credit card. That was how they always did it. She got the room, he got everything else. And he didn't ask for an extra key. He didn't remember her asking him for any ID. So how did she know his last name?
As much as that bothered him, at the moment, he needed to know what time it was more.
Hey, Sherry, I know that Alana just asked you this a few minutes ago, but would you mind letting us know what the time is again?
Certainly, sir. It's 3 a.m., of course.
That's impossible! That's what you just told us a few minutes ago. It's got to be at least 3:02. 3:03, doesn't it?
I'm sorry you're upset, sir. I'm just reading what it says on the clock.
What about your phone, Sherry? What does it say on your phone?
My phone, sir? My phone's at home. And I'm not sure how a phone could tell me the time.
Are you for real? You've never seen a cell phone. Is this some kind of joke?
Chris was getting angry. He continued.
You need to tell us what the goddamn time is, Sherry, the real time. Someone's been fucking with our clock and our phones. And it sure feels like you're in on it. Did you drug us? Sneak it into our room? I'll go to the police. Oh,
I'm sorry you feel that way, Mr. Owens, Sherry interrupted. But you won't be going anywhere. None of us get to leave. Not until it's done with you. Not unless it decides to be done with you.
And with that, the line went dead. Alana stared at Chris, a bit shocked. She couldn't remember ever seeing him this upset before. She couldn't remember ever seeing him look this scared. Chris slowly put the phone back on the receiver.
Chris, what did she say? I don't know, Chris lied. She wasn't making any sense. I think you're right. I think we should leave.
Chris didn't share what she said because it was crazy. And he didn't want to scare Alana any further. He couldn't handle it. He could barely keep his own shit together. Since they hadn't fully unpacked, Chris and Alana were able to throw what few things they'd taken out of their suitcases back in and quickly get dressed. Before we find out what awaits Chris and Alana outside their hotel room, it is time for our mid-show sponsor break. If you don't want to hear these ads, please become a Robert or Annabelle on the Scared to Death Patreon. And get these Nightmare Fuel stories and all other Scared to Death episodes ad-free and more.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What are the things that weigh you down on a day-to-day basis? What kind of stress are you holding on to? Do you spend much of your day going over things in your brain over and over until they are so distracting it affects your mental health? Well, don't worry. You're not alone.
We all carry different stressors, some big, some small. When we keep things bottled up, the results can be negative. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest without fear or judgment. It's a place to work through what is heavy on your mind and heart so that you can feel lighter and happier.
I'm always holding on to something. It's the way my anxious brain works. I'm continually worried that I've done something wrong, that I've hurt the feelings of someone I love, and that I have let someone down. I'm stressed that I'm not being a good enough mom or wife. I panic that our life will implode at any given moment and it'll all be my fault. Thankfully, I have an amazing therapist who helps me talk through each of these scenarios. After each and every appointment, I feel lighter, happier, and more capable of showing up as my most authentic self.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/scaredtodeath today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/scaredtodeath.
Summer is just around the corner. Who's excited? I know I am. With the warmer, sunnier days calling your name, the last place you're going to want to be is in your kitchen, cooking and meal prepping. Make your life easier with Factor's no prep, no mess meals.
Factor's never frozen, always fresh meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Think of all the extra time you will get outside in the summer sun when you aren't wasting hours in the kitchen.
I think I speak for everyone when I say that the summer is the busiest time of the year. We are all trying to cram in as many things as possible, from concerts to vacations and everything in between. With Kyler home from college and Monroe on her break too, I want to spend as much time as possible with them. And while I truly love to cook, the summer is the one time of year that I'm the least interested in doing that for 3 meals a day. So I lean on Factor to help keep me healthy and in step with my diet. I'm obsessed with the honey yogurt pancakes for breakfast, the pork al pastor for lunch, and the cilantro lime barramundi for dinner. So easy and saves me so much time.
Head to factormeals.com/scaredtodeath50 and use code scaredtodeath50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. That's code scaredtodeath50 at factormeals.com/scaredtodeath50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Thank you for sticking around. And now we return to the 1780 to find out if Chris and Alana will be allowed to check out early. In less than 2 minutes, they were walking out into the hallway. Before they left, they each took a silent glance at the alarm clock. Still, impossibly, it read 3 a.m. A few moments later, they were pushing the button for the elevator at the end of the hall, stepping inside, and then hitting L for lobby. Alana pleaded with Chris to remain as calm as possible when they left. "Chris, I don't want you to say a word to Sherry or anyone else. We're just walking straight out. I can deal with it all later." "Nah, she's been fucking with us, Alana. And she's about to find out she fucked with the wrong people. You can't treat people like this." "Chris, don't be that guy. Think about how that's going to look. Tall, athletic black man, small little white girl. It won't matter that you're right. Just let me handle it later with lawyers. They will regret this." Before Alana could get Chris to agree to not get into any kind of confrontation, a conversation she never thought she would ever have with him since he was never a confrontational person, they arrived on the main floor and the elevator doors were opening. Chris, furious and frightened, stormed out first with Alana right behind him, begging him to please just keep walking. "Do not talk to—" But there was no one to talk to. There was no lobby. Chris and Alana stopped. They turned and looked at each other with horror growing in their eyes. This was even crazier than time seeming to stand still. They'd both clearly felt a sensation of traveling down in an elevator towards the ground floor. They'd both watched the floors change on the elevator's monitor from 4 to 3 to 2 to L. But then they'd both stepped out into what looked like another hallway in a bunch of rooms. No, it looked like their hallway and a bunch of rooms on their floor. Directly in front of them and to the left was 401. 402 was across from it. And just down the hallway was 407, their room.
No way. This can't be," Chris said in a dazed voice. "This literally cannot be happening."
"Chris,
whimpered Alana, grabbing his hand. Chris, I'm scared. This is freaking me out. I want to leave, baby. I want to go home. I want to go home right now.
I know, baby. Me too. Let's go check the room, just to be sure it's ours. Chris said in a voice he had to really work on keeping steady before adding, the elevator just must not be working right. He knew that was bullshit before the words even came out of his mouth. No elevator glitch can make you feel like you're moving down and then pop you out on the same floor you just came from. He just didn't know what else to say. Hand in hand, Chris and Alana slowly and warily walked back down the hall. Chris put their key in the door. Thank God he'd put it in his pocket and not left it in their room when they walked out. And the door unlocked. He reached in, flipped the lights on, and they both peeked around. It was definitely their room. And the alarm clock by the bed with disheveled covers from the two of them just sleeping there still read 3 a.m. Let's try this again, Chris said through gritted teeth. He was doing his best to stay strong for Alana, even though he was just as scared as she was. Chris and Alana now walked back down the hall, got back into the elevator, where Chris, very deliberately, pushed the button for the lobby again. The door closed, and while they held each other's hands so tight their knuckles began to turn white, the elevator clearly began to descend from 4 to 3 to 2 to L for lobby, just like before. And just like last time, the doors opened back up to the fourth floor. Chris now yelled in frustration, "What the fuck is going on in this place?" He didn't care if he woke anyone up. In fact, he wanted to wake someone else up, anyone else. He wanted someone to show he and Alana their phone, a phone that showed them that the time was anything other than 3 a.m. He wanted someone, hell, he'd pay someone to escort he and Alana out of the building. Let them send in security. Please send security. Send in the fucking police. He never wanted to be thrown out of a place so badly. But despite all the noise he was making, despite proceeding to voice his fright and frustration by yelling several different phrases full of plenty of profanity and lots of volume for a good 30 seconds or more, no one opened their door. Chris, the stairs! Chris turned his head to see where Alana was now pointing. Of course. Chris was so used to always taking the elevator in a hotel, he actually forgot about the stairs. Alana now pointed to a door for the stairs no more than 20 feet from where they stood, and he was filled with hope. They could be less than a minute away from putting all this creepy, freaky shit behind them. Chris nodded at Alana, and they both hustled over to the door, flung it open, and looked at a set of stairs that was decidedly heading down. Sweet, glorious stairs, leading to the bottom of the building. With Chris carrying both of their suitcases, one in each hand, they practically ran down. They ran past the third floor landing. They ran past the second floor landing. And then they ran down to the main floor landing to the lobby. They opened the door, spilled out, and immediately had any hope they felt replaced with despair. They were back on the fourth floor. Alana lost it. She dropped to her knees and started screaming, "No! Let us out! Let us out of here, please! Let us go!" Chris was almost hyperventilating. This is impossible. This is literally impossible. This can't be happening. I must be dreaming. I have to be dreaming. This can't be happening. Chris just kept repeating these words over and over. He felt like he was on the edge of a nervous breakdown. "Chris!" Alana yelled. "How do we get out of here? We have to get out of here." Chris started yelling out for someone, anyone, to help them. "Help us! We're trapped inside the building, please!" Alana joined in. "Help us, anyone, please! We can't get out!" Then they both froze. When they heard someone in the stairwell. Someone was walking up the stairs towards them. Instinctively, they both backed away from the door. When it opened, it was Sherry from the front desk.
"Please," Alana cried out to her, "please help us get out. We just want to leave. We're so scared."
"I'm sorry you feel that way, Miss Jackson. But like I said to Mr. Owens, you won't be going anywhere. Not until it's done with you. Not unless it decides to be done with you. None of us get to leave the 1780. Not anymore." As she finished speaking, her skin started to darken, smoke, and melt, as if she were on fire. Alana started screaming hysterically. She kept screaming as Chris grabbed her and pulled her down the hall towards their room. She kept screaming as they ran, as a more and more disfigured Sherry followed, steadily advancing towards their room behind them.
Chris opened their door, they jumped inside, and he slammed it shut behind them and locked it.
Baby, what do we do?
Alana was crying. I don't know. There has to be a way out of here. Chris frantically looked around the room. The window. Maybe there was a way down from the window that he just hadn't noticed earlier. Chris ran over and unlocked and opened the same window from before after opening the curtains, and he popped his head out. Damn it! He hadn't missed shit. It was a good 30 feet down to some little awning below him. Too far. And if they missed it somehow, it was another 10 feet to the ground. Best case, they'd break some bones. Worst case, they'd break their necks and be dead. Also, oh my God. What was that? A dark and shadowy, vaguely human shape was about 40 feet to his left and 30 or so feet beneath him. And it was attached to the wall like a spider. A spider that was beginning to crawl towards them. Chris! Alana yelled as she made her way to the window, where fortunately Chris's body blocked her view of this Spider-Man that looked nothing like the man from the comic books. Can we make it down? No, baby, it's too far. Don't come any closer. He popped his head back into the room as the shadowy humanoid spider continued to approach them. He slammed the window shut and locked it, and then closed the curtains as fast as he could.
Chris, what did you see out there?
Nothing. Bam, bam, bam! Someone was pounding on their door.
Mr. Owens? Miss Jackson? This is Clayton West. I'm in charge of security. I heard from Sherry you were having some trouble and would like to check out of your room and leave the hotel.
Chris ran over to the door as Clayton spoke and looked out to the peephole. He could see some white guy, balding and heavy set with a graying beard. He was wearing a security uniform. He certainly looked the part of the night watchman.
Yes!
Chris yelled as Alana stared at him. She was now literally trembling in fear. This experience was shaking her down to the very foundation of her being. She knew that even if she got out, she would never be the same.
Yes, we want to leave right now,
Chris added. As far as he could tell, Clayton was standing out there alone. There was no sign of Sherry and her smoking, melting face.
Well, come on out then, let's get going,
Clayton replied to the door.
How do we know if we can trust you?
Chris asked.
Alana added, we're scared,
at almost the same time.
I can see that. But you're going to be a lot more scared once that thing outside the window gets into your room.
Alana looked at Chris in alarm and whispered, what thing? She and Chris then both heard the window violently rattle. Someone outside was trying to open it and get in. Chris looked more scared than ever.
Oh, God, no. Oh, please, God, no, he muttered. Chris, what's out there?
Screamed Alana.
I promise you, ma'am, you do not want to find out, said Clayton, still locked out in the hall.
Chris looked at him again through the peephole. He looked normal. He looked a hell of a lot safer than that thing he'd seen spider crawling along the wall. And then, the window shattered.
Alana! Chris yelled. We gotta go!
Chris unlocked the door as fast as he could and swung it open as the shadowy thing parted the curtains and climbed into the room and up onto the ceiling, where it now, defying gravity even more absurdly, skittered along towards the door. Alana fortunately couldn't see what was happening. Chris was pushing her out the door, following her, and slamming the door shut behind them. They'd left their luggage inside. Oh well, didn't matter anymore. The only thing that mattered to both of them at this point was making it out of this hotel alive and as quickly as possible. Chris expected the door to their room to fly open and for that thing to throw itself out into the hallway and attack them both. But instead, they didn't hear anything from inside their room.
What the fuck was that?
Chris asked Clayton, who still seemed entirely normal and very much of this world.
I don't rightly know, Clayton stated before adding. And I've been here since everything changed. A lot of us think it's what started the fire. What I do know is that you don't want to let it get a hold of you. It ain't normal what it can do to people.
Neither Chris nor Alana asked what the hell he meant by that. They didn't want to know.
Follow me,
Clayton said as he proceeded to calmly lead them back down the hallway towards the elevator and the stairs like nothing strange was happening.
Where's Sherry?
Alana asked him, her eyes nervously darting around the hallway as she did so.
At the front desk like usual, I'd imagine.
Alana and Chris both silently hoped that they were having some kind of group hallucination or that they were dreaming. Nothing made sense anymore. Clayton led them into the elevator.
We haven't been able to get this to work, said Chris.
Yeah, it glitches sometimes, but I'll get you down. It always lets me down.
Alana and Chris exchanged a concerned glance. Alana clearly wondered if they should trust this guy. Chris's shrug made it clear that they didn't really have a choice. What else could they do? Wait in the hallway for that thing to find them? Clayton pushed L for the lobby, and the doors closed. And in silence, they began to descend from 4 to 3 to 2. to L. The doors opened and, holy shit, they were finally back in the lobby. It was almost over. Chris screamed, thank you, as he and Alana took off running. They ran past Sherry at the front desk, looking exactly like she did when they checked in. She smiled as if she had never had that terrible interaction with them a few minutes earlier, as if they hadn't seen her change. They ran all the way to the front door, pushed it open, poured out onto the sidewalk, stepped off of the curb, and found themselves back in room 407. The alarm was going off. It was, of course, saying it was 3 a.m. While Chris screamed in crazed frustration and stomped the alarm clock into pieces, Alana slumped down onto the ground and started to sob. She felt broken. Once the clock was destroyed, Chris, feeling nearly broken himself, ran over to the window and threw open the curtains. The window was closed. It wasn't broken. And that spidery thing didn't seem to be anywhere inside their room. Everything had reset to how it was before. Chris locked the window and grabbed the hotel phone, calling the front desk again. He had to keep moving. He had to keep trying something, anything, to get them out. Sherry picked up again on the first ring.
Hello, Mr. Owens. Sherry at the front desk speaking. What can I help you with?
You can help us fucking leave, Sherry! Please! How do we get out of here?
I keep telling you, sir, that is not an option. None of us get to leave. Not until it's done with you. Not unless it decides to be done with you.
Who is it? Who is deciding?
Why, the hotel, of course, sir. The 1780.
None of this was making any sense, but still, Chris kept asking questions. Maybe he'd eventually fumble his way into finding out something that could help them. You keep saying none of us. Who are us?
Why, everyone who died the night of the fire, sir.
Chris's blood ran cold. He asked, what fire?
The one that always starts again, at 301, Mr. Owens.
Always? Chris frantically asked. We've never been here before. We never died in any fire.
That is correct, Mr. Owens. Sometimes the 1780 decides to take someone new. If it's any consolation, new people almost always get to leave once they've died.
The line went dead. Chris continued to hold the phone in a shaky hand. He looked again at the alarm clock on the nightstand, the one he had just stomped into nothing on the floor. It was fully intact again, like nothing had ever happened to it, like he'd never stomped it. And the time it displayed remained 3 a.m. But then, as Alana began to stop crying, as she lifted her head and asked, what did she say, Chris? The time clicked over to 3:01. Within 30 seconds, the fire alarm started blaring. By then, Chris was already explaining what Sherry had told him to Alana. She said a fire always starts at 3:01 a.m. and that everyone here, everyone but us, I think, died in this fire the first time it happened. Chris paused before adding, and if we can't figure out how to make it out of this building, we're going to die too. Alana picked herself up off the floor and spoke in a shaky voice she struggled to control.
I don't know what's happening. I feel like I've already died. Like this is hell.
I know, baby. Me too. Maybe we are already dead. But I don't want to just stay here and wait for the fire to find out. Let's keep trying, he pleaded. And then, Alana saw the real Chris for the first time since the elevator had put them impossibly back onto the fourth floor. The cool, collected optimist. The guy who didn't sweat the small stuff, or any stuff, really. He actually smiled. He looked determined. And he spoke in a way that gave her hope again. Fuck this hotel and fuck all these ghosts, baby. If we die fighting. Alana hugged him with everything she had and asked, what do we try next? Follow me, said Chris as he walked to the door. The hallway was smoke-free. Chris guessed the fire was below them, in the basement of the ground floor. Otherwise, why would anyone working down there have died that night? He led Alana down the hall, both of them running. They ran to the door to the stairs and Chris opened it. The stairwell also appeared to be smoke-free, and he and Alana entered and started running down. We're going to pop out on the second floor this time, he yelled at Alana. He hoped that whatever energy this place had wouldn't read that as some sort of escape attempt, that it wouldn't bounce them back up to the fourth floor. And he was right. By the time they made it to the second floor landing, they were seeing smoke rising up from the lobby, or maybe the basement. They heard people screaming. Chris wondered how many times Sherry and the staff, including the security guard, Clayton, and Natalie, and everyone else at the restaurant and bar, staff that probably had stayed to clean up and maybe had some drinks together after closing at 2 a.m. the night of the original fire, Chris wondered
how many times they had all burned, burning over and over and over, stuck in this hell. A hell he couldn't bear to think too hard about also being stuck in. He told Alana to follow him as he ran down the hall. They kept running until they reached the door for 207, a room that Chris reasoned was directly below their own. He started kicking the door. The door flew open with a third kick. All those years of heavy squats and lunges and weighted hip thrusts had been good for something practical after all. And Chris flipped on the lights and ran to the window. Would the 1780 let him jump out of its sick, demented gravitational pull? If not, he and Alana were as good as dead. Or, he thought, they were worse than dead. "We're gonna have to jump," Chris shouted. "There's an awning above the back door, I'm guessing. It shouldn't be more than 10 feet below. We might still get busted up when we bounce off it or bust through it and hit the ground, but we'll live." He unlocked and opened the window as he spoke. I'm gonna help you down, baby," Chris continued. "Hold my wrist tight, and I'll let you hang down as far as I can, and then I'll let you go and jump out myself." Alana felt like stalling or crying or objecting, but there was no time. Smoke was starting to come up through the vents, and there was no other way. She climbed onto the windowsill, swung her legs outside, and grabbed Chris's wrists as he also grabbed hers. "I love you," she said. "Whatever happens, I love you." "I love you too, baby," Chris said back, locking his eyes on hers. "We're gonna do this. We're gonna get out." Alana nodded, tears in her eyes, and she walked her way down the wall until her body was fully stretched out and hanging limp beneath the window, held only by her boyfriend's arms. "On the count of three," Chris yelled. "We're both gonna let go when I say go." "Okay," Alana yelled back. Chris started them off. 3, 2, 1, go! Alana looked up at Chris during the count, and right as Chris began to say the word go, she spotted the shadowy, spidery thing Chris had seen on the wall earlier. It was directly above him. She screamed out as she fell, "Chris!" Alana could see the thing grab him and Chris start to struggle with it as her feet hit the awning, then kicked out behind her, her chest and face slamming into the awning that crumpled a bit but didn't break and sent her sliding off of its side, where she then landed on her feet before quickly tumbling to the sidewalk. She'd break her nose and a wrist and be full of bruises, but she'd live. And when she landed on the ground, she did not find herself back inside the hotel, back in room 407. Chris had figured out how to beat the hotel, or the 1780 had just chosen to release her. It had decided to be done with her. But it wasn't done with Chris. "Ah!" Chris screamed out as a shadowy thing grabbed him from behind. Instinctively, he pulled his body back into the increasingly smoky room, and the thing came in with him. The first thing he noticed about this featureless, humanoid-shaped entity was the cold. It felt like he was being attacked by a creature made of something that was somehow able to move fluidly despite being frozen. Instead of feeling firm and possibly brittle like ice, it felt both powerful and airy at the same time, like something made out of an incredibly dense gas that was almost, but not quite, completely solid. And it didn't just feel cold temperature-wise. It felt cold in the sense of the complete absence of care or compassion as well. This thing wasn't concerned with how much he might suffer. It didn't care how badly he wanted to live. There would be no pleading with it. He would be shown no mercy. The only good news he took from his initial interaction was that it was not all-powerful. He fell down onto his side after pulling himself into the room, with this thing clawing and grabbing at him from above, but was able to roll over onto his back, grab it under its shoulders at the base of its long, spindly arms, and throw its body, which was quite a bit smaller and lighter than his own, down towards his feet. Then he was able to pop himself back up into a standing position. And as he did, he could hear Alana outside. "Jump, Chris! Chris, it works! I'm out! Fight, baby! Fight and jump!" As the dark creature rushed back towards him, Chris flashed on it breaking the window in 407 and entering their room. It hadn't done that quickly. It couldn't just pass through walls. But it also didn't follow them outside the room into the hall when he slammed the door. He had a plan. He just hoped he'd be able to get it out into the hallway to make it work. When the thing hit him again, he was able to grab it as it reached for his neck and spin around and throw it into the wall next to the window. Then he ran out into the hallway through the busted door that was thankfully still somewhat on its hinges. The hallway was dangerously full of smoke now, and he could see actual flames back down by the elevator. The thing did follow him out this time. It lunged at Chris and knocked him down, and they wrestled in the hallway as Chris started to choke on the smoke. He didn't have much time. He was able to fight his way back up to a standing position, and he turned and pushed the thing with everything he had towards the flames, then ran back into the room, swung the broken door shut, and quickly grabbed the tall wardrobe armoire and tipped it over across the doorway. He then turned towards the window as the thing pounded against the door to get in.
It couldn't just do whatever it wished. He might yet live. Chris took two steps toward the window, but then his legs gave out, and he fell down to the floor. He'd taken too much smoke into his lungs, and now his vision began to dim.
Chris! Jump, baby! Fight! I need you!
Fortunately, the air inches off of the floor had less smoke and much more oxygen than what Chris had inhaled as he fought the thing in the hallway. Just enough oxygen to keep him from passing out. He started to army crawl the last few feet to the window.
Bam!
The creature slammed hard into the door, hard enough to move the armoire a few inches across the floor. Chris continued his slow, determined crawl.
Bam!
Again, the creature slammed into the door. Again, the armoire moved further. Chris pulled himself up to his knees and grabbed the windowsill.
Bam!
The creature drew closer still, but it was too late. Chris put his legs outside and his belly on the windowsill, scooting and wiggling his torso until he could hang and then drop down.
Bam!
It had created almost enough space to get in. He finally pushed himself over, hanging only by his grip on the windowsill.
Bam!
It entered the room. Chris let go, and the thing grabbed his left arm.
No!
Alana yelled from below as flames now entered the room Chris was in. Flames were also now beginning to reach the rear entrance and the awning. And then, as the creature began to pull Chris up, plack! Something hit it in the head, and it changed its focus just long enough for Chris to use his free hand to tear the thing's grip loose, and he fell. When Chris regained consciousness, paramedics were carrying him on a stretcher towards the ambulance. He hit his head on the ground when he slipped off the awning and fractured his skull. Luckily, it was a slight fracture and not a major one that would leave him with brain damage or any other lingering symptoms. He'd have enough lingering symptoms to deal with based on the nightmare he and Alana had just survived. Outside of the fracture, he was physically fine, other than a lot of bruises and a cough and sore throat from the smoke. Alana walked beside him, her right arm in a sling. He asked her, "Did you hit that thing with something?" Alana smiled. After everything they had just been through, it was the sweetest sight in the world to Chris. "You're lucky I didn't break my good wrist when I fell," she said. "And then I grew up with brothers who made me play baseball." Chris smiled and coughed out a bit of a laugh as they now loaded him into the ambulance. He scanned the area for a burning building and saw nothing. The hotel, the 1780, it wasn't there. Where it stood was a small city park. Had they walked by that park earlier that evening? "It's gone, baby," Alana told him. "I already asked. The 1780 burned down in 1996. 16 people died in the fire, most of them employees. Would have been a lot more, but almost no guests were there that night." "So where were we?" Chris asked. And then, overwhelmed by it all, he lost consciousness again. Later, after recovering and getting checked out and released from the hospital, Chris and Alana would look up more info online about the Phantom Hotel. The 1780 was, before it burned down, the oldest and most haunted hotel in Savannah. In archived newspaper articles, they saw pictures of those who died. Photos of Sherry, Clayton, Natalie, and others they had seen at the restaurant. The main entity guests spotted was a shadowy, malevolent humanoid thing, sometimes seen inside, sometimes witnessed crawling around outside the building on the walls. It was rumored to be the ghost of a man, Spencer Aldridge, who'd burned alive in his room in a much earlier fire that only damaged his and a few other rooms back in 1894. Ever since, the hotel routinely had to deal with unusual fires breaking out, fires that many ghost hunters attributed to Spencer's angry spirit. And then finally, the whole building would go up in flames, 28 years to the day before Chris and Alana checked in. The fire had started burning in the middle of the night, sometime around 3 a.m. And that's it for this new chapter of Nightmare Fuel. I hope you loved, or were horrified by, or at least entertained by, Vacancy. Today's tale was written by me, Dan Cummins, and scored by Logan Keith. If you enjoyed this story, check out the rest of the Bad Magic Productions catalog. Time Suck every Monday at noon Pacific Time, with Little Short Sucks on some Fridays, and these Nightmare Fuel episodes on some Fridays as well. And new episodes of the now long-running paranormal podcast Scared to Death every Tuesday at midnight. Please go to badmagicproductions.com for all Bad Magic needs, including show-related merch, and stay scared.
Bad Magic Productions.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Meet the next generation of podcast stars with SiriusXM's Listen Next program, presented by State Farm. As part of their mission to help voices be heard, State Farm teamed up with SiriusXM to uplift diverse and emerging creators. Tune in to Stars and Stars with Issa as host Issa Nakazawa dives into birth charts of her celeb guests. This is just the start of a new wave of podcasting. Visit statefarm.com to find out how we can help prepare for your future. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.